Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime basketball and football beat reporter Jim Polzine. And Jim, I got to say, this is a weird week. I feel like after the Super Bowl, everybody's kind of coming down from football finally being over and starting to turn some attention towards college basketball. And they're like, what's going on with the Badgers? Oh, they are up and down and don't know really what they are yet, which is weird seeing as mid-February.
If that was your first game tuning into the season, you might not tune in for a second.
yeah.
We've been seeing a lot of that lately, so.
Absolutely. So we still got some good stuff to talk about, even though it's been kind of a slower week on the football side. We got a lot of basketball stuff coming up, and they announced that the Big Ten tournament's going to be all in Indy now. So we'll get into that just a little bit toward the end here. But good stuff to talk about. We're going to recap/cover this Nebraska game last night, which wasn't pretty at all. Wisconsin got the win, which is at this point all that they got to do. They, style points don't matter for a team like this. That they just got to stack some wins when they can get them. So we'll get into that a little bit. Kind of the big theme of the last few weeks for the Badgers, the 3-point shooting. Jim's got some notes on that, which are, it's kind of an interesting look because, you know, this team has to shoot threes well if they're going to be to make a run. Now that's just a the long and short of it. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Michigan game coming up this weekend. We hope, you know, everything's on track for that game to get played after Michigan has had a COVID pause. So talk about that a little bit and then get into some football stuff. Jim Leonard staying after last week, all the talk and kind of fear that he was going to leave, and then a couple other things there. So we will get into all of that right after this. All right, Jim, let's jump into this Nebraska game. Ends up being a 13-point win. The whole time, it just felt like there was basically both teams were waiting for Wisconsin to go on a run, pull away. And then it just never really happened. I mean, they got a decent lead, but it just never – like that. I feel like that could have been a 20- or 30-point blowout, and it just never happened.
Yeah, again, like if they shoot at a normal rate, although I don't even know what a normal rate is anymore for this team – but if they shoot 35% from three, that's, you know, you're adding 9 points or so there, and it's a completely different game. I thought they were ready to blow it open early in the second half, kind of after that Johnny Davis run, mini run. I thought that would just make Nebraska lose its interest. And, the problem is you still have to make shots on the other end, and they weren't. I mean, their starters were 12 of 49 combined last night, which is just, it's insanely low.
It doesn't sound real, like that you won a game that your starters made 12 shots.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just, it's bizarre. And again, like, you know, not to harp on this, because I feel like I've written it three different ways, but the looks are there. You know, I always say, like, I'd be more worried about this offense if they weren't getting good looks, if every possession was a grind that resulted in four shots. And it's just not. They're getting good looks. I mean, I think it's pretty clear at this point that they're in their heads. They're in their own heads. Mike Potter talked the other day about just how shooting is contagious. And if your teammate knocks one down, it becomes easier for you. And I think his quote was that shooting is 90% mental. And right now, mentally, they're just not in a good place. And I don't know how you get out of it. You know, I keep waiting for it to happen. But it just hasn't.
Yeah, and that's a tougher part of this too, because it's not as simple as, oh, well, scheme some stuff up, get somebody an open look, like as you've been talking about, and I think we've said on the last couple of podcasts, the offense is working, like the shots are getting produced by the movement, by the passing, by guys moving around. It's just for whatever reason they're not going in right now, and they're running out of time. I mean, I know they've got six games left now. To, you know, build some momentum, get into the tournament time and see where they can go. But they're running out of time, and it's not like they're going to be playing scrubs in the last six games here to get some of this momentum and get on a rhythm. They're playing, you know, Michigan coming up this weekend, Illinois again, Iowa twice. I mean, and then Purdue, right? I mean, there's Northwestern in there too, but there are just no easy games for them to really find something. They've got to get on a roll here against some of the best competition in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think defensively they've looked a little bit better lately. I know a lot of people were upset with the Illinois game. Understandably so, but I went back, I watched that game twice now, in addition to being there live. I didn't think their defense was that horrible that game. There were some breakdowns in spots, but I mean, right out of the gates, Illinois made probably, I think 9 of their first 11 points were what I would consider just good offense beating good defense. There were contested shots, some shots going away from the basket, a contested 23-foot three-pointer. You know, and obviously the pick and roll killed them. They couldn't match IO and Kofi. And that was a big deal. But I thought from a following rules standpoint, they did pretty good. I think Illinois ended up like 1.09 points per possession, which, you know, is not great if you're a defense, but it's not awful either, especially when you're considering who you're going up against. So
yeah, considering that talent.
Right. And last night, the first 8 minutes was pretty poor, especially in transition defense. But after that, they locked down. So the formula, I almost said simple formula, because it's not simple, because, you know, if it was simple, they could do it every game, is to play that kind of defense and then just make some shots on the other end. You know, make your three-pointer shoot. I don't know what the magic number is. You almost feel like you have to shoot at least 35% from three-point range, and that gives you a chance. 38% or better, I think, gives you a chance to win. I mean, that's what I want to see Sunday is, you know, even if they don't win that game, just shoot better and give yourself a chance, because that's the one thing they didn't do in Ann Arbor is they did not give themselves a chance for various reasons. But it's just, it's painful to watch right now. And especially when you've seen it go the other way. Last year, this team was playing loose, knocking down shots, confident. And they just have not gotten back to that.
Yeah. And I think to your point, they didn't, I made a note of it watching the game last night. They only let up 5 points in the last 10 minutes of the first half, but then they were only able to get a 3-point lead at half. Like that's, you only let up 5 points over 10 minutes and then your offense is struggling so bad you can't build a lead off of that. And it's just, it's so weird because we hear all the time about this experience this team has, and they, like, to your point about it being mental, like, they know they're struggling, right? I mean, there's no secret about it, and it's got to be frustrating for them. And then I think the last, maybe 4 or 5 games from where Dimitri Trice was about a month ago to where he is now, like, where he is now is a little bit closer where he's been his whole career, where it's like, you know, a decent scorer, really good everywhere else. But he was at a point where he was scoring at the best rate of his career while also giving you all the other stuff. And now that that's come back down to earth, this offense, nobody else around him has kind of caught that fire. You know, it's still kind of waiting on him to lead it all. And I don't think that that's a winning formula down the stretch here.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you make a great point. And the one thing I thought, even going back to the beginning of last season, when you were kind of in the post Ethan Happ era, I looked at this offense and said, all right, I think it has a chance to be better because you have the ability to put 5 shooters on the floor at once. And what are the odds of all 5 of them being ice cold at the same time? And that's exactly what's happened now is none of them are shooting well. And it's impossible to overcome that. You know, if 2 or 3 guys are hot, you can make up for 2 or 3 guys in a slump. You can't win like this in the Big Ten consistently if everybody's cold. And now they've drifted down. I think they're 10th now in 3-point shooting in the Big Ten. I think I looked this morning. They're down to 32.4% from 3-point range in the Big Ten. That's 10th. For this team to be good, I think that they needed to be like a top 3 3-point shooting team in the league, because like you said earlier, this offense is built around that. This offense is built around kind of spreading the court and being able to knock down shots and extending defenses so then things open up close to the rim. I mean, Nebraska mucks things up and they're going to double the post. They're going to pack the paint.
Yeah, they're playing some zone at points last night. They're just, hey, you got to beat us from the outside, and not bad strategy.
Especially against a team like Wisconsin that is shooting the way it is right now. We've seen it work the other way. Brad Davison made 8 three-pointers at Pinnacle Bank Arena last year. And Trice shot well at game 2, I think. So it can come back to bite you. But, yeah, that's exactly how I would defend Wisconsin right now, is just, you know, prove you can beat us from 3-point range, because we know you can't really do anything else. You know, they're not they're not going to be able to attack you. They're not finishing at a good enough rate inside. They're not like they're building up a lot of free throws. You know, they did last night in the second half. They got to the line early and got some points there, but it just it's a struggle right now.
Yeah, and one of the only big things I would think to come out of a game like that last night was the change in the starting lineup where Nate Reavers goes back to starting. What did you make of that? Did Greg Gard talk much about it after the game? Like, what was the kind of the rationale there?
He was asked. I think it was a kind of a two-part deal. Reavers has been playing better. I think he earned the opportunity. Potter struggled a little bit at Illinois. And also just defensively, you know, again, Nebraska's like a lot of teams in this league where they have the lineup they put on the court is basically four wings and or guards, you know, the slashers. And they think Reavers is a little bit better at kind of defending the paint and being able to, you know, move his feet a little bit better and handle some of that. So it made sense to me. The tough thing with Potter is when he's playing well offensively, he's hard to keep off the court, even though he sometimes struggles on the other end of the court. But now the last couple of games, he has not played well offensively. It's a little bit easier to sit him for long stretches, but they need more out of Nate Reavers too. And I thought Nate Reavers had kind of turned a corner. He didn't play as well last night, I didn't think, but you know, they need all hands on deck. I guess that's the thing. Like I may have mentioned it last week in the show. Last year when they were playing well, everybody was playing decent or you know, decent to good. Now, like you look at it and like who's playing well besides, you know, Jonathan Davis, I think is one guy you can say is playing well. Trevor Anderson for his role is playing well. None of the guys who started last night are playing all that well.
Yeah, and we want to talk about Trevor Anderson because it's, I'd say, the last 2-3 weeks, every time he's out there, it seems like some good things happen. He's ended up in the plus in all their wins. I mean, he's doing some good stuff, and it's one of those guys where you need him to be a good tournament team because he's your, I don't know, what would you say, like 7th or 8th guy? Depending on how the rotation is. Eighth guys. So, I mean, that's about as deep as you're going to go once you get down to crunch time. So what do you think Anderson does or, you know, brings to the team outside of, you know, they need a reserve guard for the backcourt, but just what do you think he's doing that's making an impact?
His offense tends to get stagnant at times, a little, you know, too much standing around. And when he's in the game, I think that changes almost always. He moves himself. He makes some pretty strong cuts. He keeps the ball popping around the perimeter. Last night, I thought he probed and attacked, you know, with the dribble drive. I just think the offense, you know, tends to run a little smoother when he's in the game. A lot of times it allows Demetri Trice to move to the 2 spot and take a little pressure off him, you know, where he's not in the primary ball handling role. And you know, like when things are going good, Trice is your best shooter. It you know, it makes sense to have him in the game at kind of the, you know, the shooting guard spot. So I just think he, you know, I just think he adds a little bit of a spark. Him and Johnny seem to have, you know, a chemistry, a bond, and they play well together. And you know, it's the second time in 3 games now where those two have provided a spark at a much needed time. And you know, Trevor's great. I'm glad Trevor's playing well because he's a great quote and he's been in 2 of the last 3 post-game media conferences. I just think he's a real insightful guy, knows the game. His dad was a coach. His grandpa was a coach. He's got a high basketball IQ and I think he helps his team. And I know a lot of people are calling for more minutes from him. I don't know exactly what the answer is there. You know, some people are suggesting less Davison, more Anderson. I actually thought Davison played of the starters. He played the best of the group last night, which, you know, isn't a high bar considering the way some of those guys shot, but you know, he had 3 3-pointers. He took 2 charges. I think his plus minus was pretty high, you know, last night was one of those cases where I think having Brad Davison on the court was good. And I don't know that I would have Anderson in place of Davison in that situation. So the tough thing for Greg Gard, and not to sound like I'm defending him, is I don't think he knows what he's going to get from these guys every night.
That's a great point.
You know, so it's hard to say this is what I'm going to do, because you can come in with a plan and the lack of consistency individually from these guys makes it hard to stick to that plan.
It is. And then in his position, it's got to be tough to think, you know, for the last 4 years, Brad Davidson's given me X, Y, and Z. Yeah, I know he's not playing right now, but eventually it's going to come back. But he's got to play to get there, right? It's got to be one of those, you know, get into a rhythm out there, continue playing shoot or shoot mentalities. And it's like, do you start messing with the rotations at this point in the year? Because, you know, your mind is Brad Davidson, somebody like Aleem Ford, have got to get back to that level where we know they can play, but we're running out of time to figure that out. And I'm glad you brought up Anderson Davis together, because maybe it's just because they run like second team against the starters all the time. But I think you're right. They play off each other so well. I mean, Davis is a natural two guard, and I think that there's just a nice chemistry there that in those minutes where it's a more primary bench unit versus primary bench unit, they're getting the advantages there. And that's, if they can get this, the starters rolling a little bit more, those minutes where Trice can rest, or, you know, Davison comes off the floor and they can still add to a lead or at least keep the game where it was, that's going to be a big advantage if they can get going at the starter level.
Yeah, I mean, for an offense that desperately needs it, those two guys add a little something on that end of the court, and you know, you would hope. Yeah, I think they have the trust of Greg Gard at this point of the season, and you know, I do think you'll see them more and more down the stretch.
Sure. All right, so let's move forward here, looking at the Michigan game. If you guys remember, the Michigan game earlier this year was one of the worst losses of the Greg Gard era. It was just not pretty from the jump. I think the lead, what did it end up being at some point? Like 35?
It got as high as 40.
40, yeah. So, I mean, it was a disaster. When, as you've gone back through it in the last few days, Jim, what do you think went, what was the key issue, if there's one you can pinpoint in that blowout loss?
Yeah, I'm going to go back and watch it again this morning. But what I remember is Michigan really extended their defense and forced Wisconsin away from the basket. And it just really left them kind of discombobulated. They got some turnovers off that they converted into easy baskets. Wisconsin never, you know, when you have an aggressive defense that's, you know, denying the ball, in some cases you can beat that with backdoor cuts. You know, you can, there's ways to work around that. Wisconsin never figured it out. Didn't shoot well, didn't defend well. It was just, you know, I thought Michigan, to its credit, and I don't want to take anything away from Michigan, I thought Michigan looked like world beaters that night. I thought they played about as good as a team can play, and kind of left me thinking, wow, this is a Final Four type team. If they play like this, they've got everything, right? They've good point guard, really good wings. I mean, NBA level guys. They have a center, a freshman center who plays beyond his years. I walked out of the arena that night thinking that's a really good team. Now the question is, they're coming off a long pause. They haven't played since like January 22nd or something. That's a long time not to play, and then go on the road and play a team that's, you know, going to be an NCAA tournament team. So that's the curiosity for me, is how does Michigan look after the long pause? And that's why, you know, I would have never thought Wisconsin had a chance to beat that team just based on how things went in Ann Arbor. But that's why I'll give them a chance Sunday, is because I don't know how Michigan's going to look. I don't know how, from a continuity standpoint, how it's going to be when you don't play for that long.
Yeah, and understand, when we say pause, it wasn't just games canceled. Like, these guys were in their – they were almost, like, locked down in their apartments, dorms or whatever, for essentially 2 weeks. They weren't allowed to work out together. Everything they did, they had to go find a way to do on their own. It's kind of like what happened to the football team here at Wisconsin during their COVID break, where it was basically stay away from each other, nobody do anything together, and try to stay in shape at a, you know, Big Ten championship level team in a midseason pause like this. So I think that's a huge point. Because when did they – I think I saw they return to practice Monday?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, even – so in, on one hand, you're saying, oh, well, they've had an entire week to practice. On the other, it's like the first 3 or 4 days of that's just going to be getting back into shape. Like – some of these guys, I haven't read up all like what these guys were doing, but I'm sure some of these guys haven't shot consistently, haven't been able to get shots up in weeks, because everything that they would have access to, they weren't allowed to go into, and they weren't supposed to go to like the on-campus rec center and stuff like that. So I'm sure there's a big balance there between, let's just knock the rust off versus actually trying to prepare for a road game against Wisconsin. And I mean, if there's a game where you just got to throw everything on the floor, kitchen sink type of game for the Badgers. This is it. Like, not only would a win over Michigan, Wisconsin's a tournament team, but a win over Michigan becomes like your blue chipper win. It's the best win of the season if they were able to pick it up. So I think this is one of those games that if you're guard in this team, you've just got to try to take advantage of whatever you can and throw everything at Michigan, because like you've been talking about, they've been off for so long.
Yeah, I would like to see I think the first 5 to 10 minutes of this game are going to be really telling. And I'd like to see an effort from Wisconsin that, urgency, right? That's what I want to see. Again, you can't, it's hard to control if shots are going to go down or not, right? That's some of that is uncontrollable. But there's other parts of the game, rebounding, defense, getting on the floor, winning 50-50 balls. That's the type of stuff I want to see early on Sunday from this team. Show some emotion, show some energy, and, build some confidence that way. And then maybe the shooting becomes a little bit easier.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting too, because you mentioned before the transition baskets that Michigan got, those are things that Wisconsin, typically does a good job avoiding. Like they're not going to give up those live ball turnovers as we've talked about before, but this is the type of game where when you have a team that's coming off this pause, maybe that grinded out style, making them be disciplined for so long and, really try to lock in defensively, maybe that's an advantage for Wisconsin this time, as opposed to trying to run up and down the floor with them. I'm not sure. It's going to be a weird one, because just talent wise, I think we saw Michigan has more talent. Like, I don't think that's really a question. It's just that Wisconsin's got to out execute them and kind of out scheme them when they're coming off this kind of weird, unique situation where they haven't played in a long time.
I mean, you look at last year again, I hate to keep harping on last year, but there was, during that 8-game winning streak, there was a lot of games where Wisconsin was not as talented as the other team. But you can make up for that when you're playing well together and you're, everything's kind of cohesive and synergy. Like, that's the word they use a lot. And that works on both ends of the court. And we just have not seen that synergy. There's no connectivity, I think, is another word that they use. We just haven't seen that as much. And that's been the disappointing thing about this season. But like you said, there's plenty of opportunities to turn this around and get back to playing the way you think you can be playing. And Sunday's kind of the start of that. You win that game, suddenly you get some confidence and you can finish the season strong and have some sort of, building block going into the postseason.
Sure. And you've got it in our show notes here, and I haven't even really thought about it, but the Michigan pause does a lot of weird things to the Big Ten standings, because they missed, I think, 6-7 games in that stretch?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out exactly how many they missed. I don't think they missed that many.
Oh, okay. Maybe I thought five. Okay. So right around there, between 5 and 7. But that's going to – there's not a ton of time to make those up, and you're going to be trying to ask teams to play 3 and 4 games a week for this 3-week stretch right before the tournament time. It's going to, one, I think we're going to talk about what this does to the standings and everything, but I think it's going to be interesting if, let's say a Northwestern, it's a team that's really struggling. It's like, no, I'm not playing 4 games in a week just because Michigan didn't get to play. Like, what if some of these teams that need to make up games are like, no, we're not playing. Too bad.
Yeah. I think the tough situation there is, the Big Ten steps in and says, do you want money or not? And all this stuff is tied to TV. So I don't think, and that's the thing with the Big Ten tournament too, not to get away from this topic, but, we've heard a lot about teams opting out of the Big Ten tournament. Problem there is then you've got fewer games that can be televised. And I think all these athletic departments are hurting for money. And even if you don't want to play necessarily, even if you think there's no point of playing a postseason tournament game, I just think that's where the Big Ten steps in and says, too bad. We need the revenue. And it's got potential to be kind of a weird situation. What if a team goes down there that's an NCAA tournament team, plays a game and somebody tests positive, and all right, of a sudden they're out for the NCAA tournament when they didn't even have to be down in Indy in the first place? It's a weird situation. Like, what do you do if you're Michigan too? You've got this team that's Final Four caliber, right? And we've seen that. But they're going to have to fit a bunch of games into like a 3-week schedule. Is it worth it just to say you're Big Ten champion? Do you even want to play the full?
So.
Yeah. I mean, do you even want to get those games? And I think as of right now, I think there's five games that need to be rescheduled for Michigan. So five, and that's in addition to six that are already scheduled. They've got 11 games left, and we're 3 weeks away from the end of the season. 4 weeks, I guess. It's just, you know, that's a lot of games to fit in. And you wonder, if you're Michigan, do you even, you know, what's the advantage there? You're wearing yourself out entering postseason play. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. There's no easy answer.
Yeah, it's weird because in football, they had it pretty much down to, or they had it figured out where it's like, if the game's off, the game's off. We're not rescheduling. Canceled, right? They ended up changing those rules for Wisconsin, Minnesota that week nine. The thing is, they don't really have a week nine here in basketball. They don't have that extra week to, you know, make up some of these games. And, you know, as you said, they're playing the tournament, right? They're going to play the Big Ten tournament, because I know there was talk earlier in the year of cancel the tournament, give yourself that buffer weekend to make some stuff up if you need to, and just make the regular season champ your auto bid. I don't know if that would work or not, but I think it's going to be – I don't know, because I think you make a good point. Like, why would Michigan want to play those games either? Like, other than the TV stuff we mentioned before, but, you know, they know they're good. They've got to get back to, get back in shape and get back in the rhythm they were in. But it's like, do they need to fill in, you know, play basically every other game or every other day for 3 weeks? That's probably not a good idea.
No. And then so I put this in the show notes, but how about this scenario? Let's say Illinois and Ohio State, one of those teams, finishes the full 20 games and goes like 15-5. Michigan doesn't get the full 20 games in; they go 14-4. Who's your champion? You know, yeah. I suppose you could go by winning percentage, but it becomes messy. And I guess maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe I'm being too much of a traditionalist here, where I'm thinking there has to be a Big Ten champion. And if any year there doesn't have to be, I guess it's this year, but it's just, you know, it's messy. And I'm not sitting here with any sort of solution. I don't have any solution for this. It's just, probably should have expected this was going to happen based on, you know, how things were with the pandemic, but I don't know what the answer is. This was interesting. I didn't even know this. Last night, Greg Gard said, you know, if y'all remember this game was supposed to be played Thursday. The Nebraska game was supposed to be played Thursday at 4 p.m. It got moved up to Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Wisconsin didn't find that out until Monday afternoon. Yeah. As of Sunday and Monday, there was talk that the game could be played Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, which was interesting to me that they would have thought about moving this game back to Friday. I don't know if they're going to try to fit another Nebraska game in Wednesday, a different opponent. I don't know if Wisconsin put up a stink and said, listen, we don't want to go to Nebraska on Friday and then come home and play Michigan on one day prep on Sunday. That's not fair. So that was all very interesting. Also, Wisconsin didn't fly to Nebraska until Wednesday morning, and they're flying back this morning. And a lot of that has to do with kind of the charter company it just not working out that they could get in and out the same day. But man, it was, we've got a million stories about why this season's been weird from a scheduling standpoint. And that was another one that you just kind of like, wow. I mean, this is a chaotic time, and these guys have had to adjust to a lot. No, it's for every team. I'm not saying Wisconsin's any worse off than any other team. Everybody's going through this, but it's bizarre.
And maybe, I mean, not that a coach would ever say it, because they would be accused of making excuses, but maybe that's why the slow start happened. You know, it's a very rare thing for them to fly the day of the game, right? I mean, that's it's a short flight, but still.
Right. And I thought about that too. And they didn't really prep for Nebraska. But on the flip side, Nebraska played Monday night at Minnesota and had to take a mandatory day off on Tuesday. So they had zero practice for Wisconsin, other than they went through some Wisconsin stuff in the shoot around that morning, Wednesday morning. So, you know, it works for both teams. It's a bizarre thing. I don't think it was any advantage or disadvantage to Wisconsin.
You know, we've talked about the Big Ten tournament a little bit here. Came out this week that it's going to be all in Indianapolis, just like the NCAA tournament, or not. I shouldn't say all in Indianapolis. All in Indiana. Central Indiana is going to host these tournaments because there's going to be stuff at, you know, Purdue at Indiana University, some of these other places in that area. Jim, one, I mean, just do you, my vibe on this was the Big Ten is doing the NCAA a favor and giving them a dry run with a smaller team, like smaller set of teams. I that's how I kind of saw it because, I should add to Chicago's not in the place pandemic wise and, you know, population density to welcome in this many people from all over. So I think that was a big factor in it. But then two, I do think the NCAA and the Big Ten kind of worked this out. It's like, hey, let's get these operations in order with the Big Ten tournament on a smaller scale. And then when we expand it in a couple of weeks, or excuse me, the next week, with the NCAA tournament, we'll be a little bit more ready.
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it. I really do. And it just, from a Big Ten standpoint, I thought it made sense that why have, if let's say nine Big Ten teams made the NCAA tournament, why have them in Chicago one on a weekend and then have them all move to Indianapolis when you could just have them in Indianapolis in the first place? So I think that makes sense. I had a lot of questions. Why play this? Are fans going to be allowed? And I don't know the answer to that yet. And if they're not, why play it at such a big stadium like Lucas Oil? It's going to be so weird. And my counter to that is that building can accommodate a lot of teams. It's just got the locker rooms. It's you can spread out in terms of safety and following protocols. I think that's the best place to do it. And I agree with you that the NCAA is probably looking at this like, you know, here's our, you know, here are our guinea pigs. Here's our dry run. And let's see how it goes. They're going to have two courts working for the NCAA tournament. I don't know that they will for the Big Ten tournament, but that's a possibility. So I just think it made a lot of sense and not to move these teams around. I mean, they're, you know, like I think Wisconsin's probably going to have to bus down there. There's a mileage thing. And I think they're inside that mileage. So I think they bus down there and then they just stay there until they're done. And it's weird, but it's just another weird thing in a weird year.
That's crazy. So like in theory, Wisconsin needs to pack for like a month, right? If they think.
Yeah. Somebody joked around with, I can't remember where it was, but somebody joked around with Greg Gard about that earlier this week. It might've been his, I think he talked to the boosters. I think that's where it was. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't even gotten to that point, but yet. Yeah, I guess like, cause you're not coming home in between. And it's, they're gonna have to prepare for a long stay. Now they hope that they're playing well enough that they have a long stay. Cause I think right now you look at it, you think it could be a pretty short stay unless they get things figured out.
When do you think the Big Ten makes a decision on how many teams are in the tournament? Cause you mentioned maybe there's nine, like this has been a discussion for weeks. Like if the Big Ten is going to bring in all these teams and the whole opt-out discussion. So when do you think the Big Ten makes a call on how many teams are going to have in?
That's a good question. I mean, I think part of it is you need to kind of see, you need more clarity on what the situation is. Like, let's say you limit it to eight teams. Well, what do you say to the ninth place team that's on the bubble? I don't know, like just throwing it out there, Indiana.
Yeah, I was going to say Indiana, yeah.
Yeah, what do you say to that? Michigan State. You're going to tell me that you're going to leave Michigan State at home if they're in 10th place and kind of on the NCAA tournament bubble?
Or Indiana just, and you're 30 minutes away.
And... Yeah, exactly. And it's, yeah, exactly. It's, which makes me think that they, as much as that's been talked about, that they might just let the whole shebang in, all 14 teams, in part because that gives you, you know, that gives you the 11 versus 14 and 12 versus 13 games that you can put on Big Ten Network that first day, you know? And I think the more games on TV, the better. And, yep. And so that's why I wonder, TV, as we know, TV runs the world. If there's a reason that game was at 8:30 last night. There were games at 4:30, 6:30, and 8:30. So Big Ten Network could have as much programming as possible. And I think TV will end up winning out in this situation. Also, even though there's reasons for leaving a team like Nebraska on the outside looking in, I mean, why have Nebraska there is a great argument, but I don't know where you draw the line on who gets to go and who doesn't get to go.
Yeah. Oh, it's kind of interesting. And I think this whole doing all of this in central Indiana is going to be interesting too, because I mean, Indianapolis itself is built for events. And as you see, it's a very walkable city and all these hotels and the event centers, all that stuff. But then you're telling a team, okay, you're going to stay in Indianapolis, but then now you need to go up to Bloomington. And not like it's far, but it's like, it's a much different scenario and situation than a usual NCAA tournament where you go to that city. If you advance, then the next weekend you're in another city and it's all kind of contained.
Yeah, I do think the Big Ten teams will not have to play in either one of those venues. Although I shouldn't say that. I wonder if a first four team, like if one of the Big Ten teams is a first four team, if they will have to play at Mackey or Bloomington. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to work that. I mean, my guess would be that they'd want to get them in one hotel and leave them there, you know? So I don't know. It's a lot to work out. And like I said, I mean, the next 3 weeks will kind of make it more clear. But it's, you know, there's still so much possibility of this going haywire. There really is, as we've seen all season. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be any less possibility of that happening in March, even though I think they're going to go out of their way to make it as safe as possible.
Yeah. And then last thing on basketball here, when you look around the Big Ten, the fact that Wisconsin has been to this point, knocking on wood here, COVID free and haven't had, I mean, their own team, I'm not talking about the other, like the outside, they've had games affected and canceled and everything like that. But the fact that they've done this well is very impressive given the challenge of this season and how hard this is to do right now.
Yeah. I mean, it leaves you kind of wondering, you know, like, is there something yet to come, right? How long can you dodge that bullet? You know, Greg Gard said over and over that, you know, it's hard to avoid this thing and it's like oxygen and it's, you know, you can't avoid it. And so they managed to do it this long. And you know, can they hold on another 4 or 5 weeks and not have any, I mean, they did have some cases in the summer. They didn't really make that public, but you know, some of these guys have had it. I don't know the exact number, but to not have, you know, any positive test during the season has been pretty incredible.
All right, Jim, let's jump into some football here. Not a ton here as we start to wrap up the show, but the big one, the big story of the week or weekend, last weekend, Jim Leonard is going to stay at Wisconsin. Turned down the Packers offer to become their defensive coordinator late last week, I should say. We talked, I feel like I was pretty much resigned to Jim Leonard was leaving when we were talking last week on the podcast. Like I was like, this is so apples to apples for him. This would be such a perfect fit, Wisconsin guy, the Packers, all this stuff. And then you start reading, and Tom Oates, our colleague, was first to report the story, but you kind of just read it and it came down to, he just didn't really want to leave Wisconsin and he respects the Packers and he knows it would have been a great opportunity. And you read some of his quotes and what Jim Leonard's thoughts were. And it was basically like, yeah, he really enjoys what he does. And maybe that NFL challenge just isn't all that appealing to him quite yet. Maybe he's just going to wait a little bit longer. I thought it was very interesting that he admitted like this was, his foot was out the door, but he said, you know what, Wisconsin's still the place.
Yeah, because I thought, like we said this, if there was one thing that could pull him away, I thought that would be the NFL job that would do it. But, he said this in the past that I think he feels like something special is coming in this program in the next 2-3 years. You know, they've done – the recruiting has obviously picked up. I think he wants to be here if, you know, this program takes it to the next level, makes it to the playoff. You know, I just think he wants to be part of that. And I think he can sense that, you know, they're close to doing that. So I think that's a big part of this. I don't think he wants to leave. I mean, I he loves the place. Don't get me wrong. But I also think he thinks there's, you know, something big on the horizon and he wants to be there to help this program get there.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And especially when you hear what these recruits say about the fact that Jim Leonard recruited them or what Jim Leonard does in these meetings and coaching them when they're on the team. I think that he knows that his impact is so great here. And on top of that, the control that he has of the defense here, like the autonomy that he has to run his defense the way he wants when he's got Paul Chryst, who is a secure head coach here. I mean, you know, barring disaster, you know, a secure head coach here that lets him run the defense how he wants. That's a rare combo to get when you're this young in your coaching career. I mean, it was rare for him to become a defensive coordinator in his second year as a college football coach, and to have the level of kind of autonomy and the control that he has running the defense how he wants, adding new schemes, moving players in and out. I think that that's something that he respects and appreciates. Paul Chryst appreciates, but just the the level of control that he has of this defense, he's not going to get anywhere else. And Matt LaFleur is kind of the same coach in Green Bay, where he's so offensive minded that he lets the defense run itself. But I don't think that they were going to just hand him the defensive keys like he's got here at Wisconsin and Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good situation in a lot of ways. And I think that's a good point that he doesn't have someone looking over his shoulder. He's beloved here. But I do think that he thinks he's got a good group of guys around him. And I think he thinks there's big things on the horizon. I mean, Paul Chryst had to be breathing a huge sigh of relief, right?
Yeah.
In an off season where he's already had to, fill some spots, that would have been, it would have been a tough one to fill, especially this late in the game. In February. So, I'm sure he was breathing a monster sigh of relief that Jim Leonard is staying put.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a second, because Paul Chryst made some comments to the Milwaukee alumni of Wisconsin last night that were in that similar vein. But you brought up a great point that Jim Leonard's got a lot of good guys around him. The defensive coaching staff hasn't had those changes. I mean, they changed defensive line coaches, but it was a guy that's already in the building that he already knows very well, in Ross Kalaji. And I think the big thing with this defense is for Jim Leonard and Paul Chryst, the defense is going to lead this team again next year. Like, we all expect Graham Mertz is going to be better than what we saw most of the year in 2020. But it's still going to be a question of, can a retooled offensive line, outperform what it did in 2020? Can Jalen Berger take another step? Can the receivers get back on track? And some of those young guys on offense make a bigger impact? The defense is still going to be the star of the show. Like, this is going to be a defensive-led team again next season. And with a lot of their key pieces back, they've got to replace some defensive linemen. But outside of that, they're pretty solid on what they had last season. So I think that's got to be a factor too. Like you mentioned, Leonard sees something special coming, and it's this year, it's next year, and I think the year after that is when you're really going to see the recruiting start to pay off, the guys that they already have here continue to make big impacts. So I'll tell you, I went ice fishing on Saturday. So I was out. I'm not a fisherman. I'm not an outdoors guy. Never been, but I was like, being cold and drinking kind of sounds like me. So yeah, Let's do it. So I was at this cabin with some of my buddies from college, and I start seeing the news that OT puts out about Leonard, and I was like flabbergasted. I could not believe it. So I'll tell you, I definitely thought Jim Leonard was going to be the Packer coordinator by the end of the weekend. I was very surprised when it didn't happen.
Yeah. Also, we had a schedule last week, right?
Oh, yeah, we sure did, Jim. They hyped it up like there was going to be some massive changes, and it really just flipped Minnesota back to late in the year, and then flipped around the games that they should have had at home this year. So it only changed a couple of things. I'm glad that the Minnesota game's late in the year, because I think that's just fun. I like it when it's a weekend of Thanksgiving, like all the other big rivalries where, and as it's starting to become, that might be the determining factor in the Big Ten West year in, year out. So I think it's cool. It'll be the last week of the year. And then what was it? They flipped where the Nebraska game was, and the Purdue game too. Nothing major happened, I'll tell you that right now.
I look at that schedule. It's a good home schedule. I'm really hoping that things are returning normal and fans can be, back in the stands, because it's one of the better home schedules I remember around here in a while.
Yeah, and I really hope that they're able to do these non-conference games, not only because you've got the Notre Dame game and that Soldier Field, and that's going to be really cool, but Army coming here in October, middle of the conference season, number one, Army's not a joke program whatsoever. And then that stylistic matchup, doing a trip or facing a triple option team, a little bit better than some of the other ones they played in the past. Right in the middle of your season like that, only giving yourself a few days to prepare for it. I think that's a really fun game to have right in the middle of the year there. Yeah. So I really hope the schedules can stay intact, because I think it's going to be not only really cool matchups and really challenging ones, but I just think that that's something that, if you're able to have that schedule and win the Big Ten West, like, you've got a real chance at the Big Ten championship with all the transition that's happening at Ohio State and Penn State and some of these other programs that have a ton of turnover coming in next year.
How about this stretch in terms of storylines? Notre Dame at Soldier Field. The next week, Harbaugh and Michigan come here. The next week, you go play at Illinois and Bielema, and then the Army game, like you mentioned. It's good stuff. I mean, selfishly, yeah. Again, from a media standpoint,
I am very glad that's in that early part of the season and you're not playing or not covering basketball yet. I'll tell you that right now. Just wanted to recap a couple of things from, like I mentioned, Paul Chris talked to the Milwaukee chapter of the UW alumni last night, and he talked about Jim Leonard staying, and he said, you know, the whole time, like I wrote it down 1 second. So he said, you know, what Jim Leonard does brings a lot of attention because he does such a good job and they all know that. And he said, you know, it's basically every year that other jobs are interested in him. And he said that he's wanted everything to go well and be what Jim Leonard wanted for him and his family. But everyone, myself, teammates, his players, the other coaches, were all very excited that he was staying. And that's about as exuberant as Paul Chris is going to get publicly, I feel like. So I think you're completely right what you said earlier, that there's a big sigh of relief from Paul Chris and his Badger staff that Jim Leonard's staying, at least for now, because I think, as we said before, that job, that the Packer job in that situation, that roster being a game away from the Super Bowl 2 years in a row, that's a tough one to turn down. I would love if we could get Jim Leonard just on a podcast or something saying like the thought process that went into all that, because that's just such a hard thing to say no to.
Yeah. I mean, I was with you. I thought late last week that it was going to be a done deal at some point that he was heading up there.
Yeah. So then the other thing that Paul Chris said, which I thought was kind of funny and interesting, that he's talked to Brett Bielema multiple times since he's got hired by Illinois, and that he knew that's what Brett Bielema wanted to do, is get back into college coaching and be a head coach in the college ranks again. And he's excited for him and wants to see what that matchup is. And I don't know if I believe like 5% of that or like zero, but we'll see what happens in October when they play. Right.
Did you see, I don't know if you've noticed this, Illinois, like their motto in recruiting is tough, smart, dependable. I think it is, where like all you hear from Wisconsin is smart, tough, dependable. It's like they've switched the words around.
And I've seen that. And then built here, their whole thing is to keep Illinois guys in Illinois, which has been a struggle for Illinois since, I don't know, they started playing football. Like, I appreciate every Illinois coach that goes there and says, oh, we're going to start keeping guys. And it's like, that hasn't happened in 50 years. So good luck. But
yeah, I mean, this is going to be a fun to have Brett Bielema back in the league. He will, you know, as we know, he will run his mouth. He's going to tick off a lot of opposing fan bases, including this one. I know I come at this from a different viewpoint than fans, because I'm selfishly looking for good storylines, but he is a good storyline, and it's, for me, it's good to have him back in the league.
For sure. Who do you think is going to, like, who will Badger fans root for between Minnesota, Illinois, or the Meteor in that weekend?
That's a really good one.
So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a great question. Like, on your ranking of your Big Ten West villains, who's number one? Is it Brett Bielema or is it PJ Fleck?
I gotta think it's still Fleck, but Bielema's 1B.
All it'll take, you're probably right, all it's gonna take for Bielema to move to the top is him running his mouth about Wisconsin or beating Wisconsin. You know, yes, if they become competitive, you know, it was easy for Wisconsin fans to dump on him at Arkansas because that program, you know, he didn't take it anywhere. Right. But if he turns Illinois around or makes them relevant again, suddenly it becomes more dislikable to this fan base.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then last thing on the football front, we'll have a story coming out either Friday or sometime this weekend about Miles Burkett, the first 2022 recruit, quarterback from Franklin. A really interesting story about, you know, how he's really dealt with. I mean, I'll admit, when he signed, I was like, oh, man, that's going to be a tough road to get on the field when you've already got Graham Mertz here. And then they're really high on Deacon Hill, the quarterback they brought in 2021. And I talked to him a little bit about that and his coach. And they all kind of say, like, yeah, I've been dealing with that, you know, my whole career, guys in front of me and trying to battle them out. And lots of good stuff coming there. So I'm excited for, one, to write that one because I got to get writing on it. But then, two, for you guys to read it. So.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear about him. I mean, we talked about how this recruiting class has been kind of a slow start to it for obvious reasons. I'm curious to see if things pick up in the next couple of months. They have a lot of really good in-state prospects that they have prioritized. I'm curious to see if any more jump on board in the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, the offers are getting announced right now, but in the last couple of weeks, we've seen some receivers and some other guys around the country start announcing offers. So, like you said, I think the priority in the last month or so has been the in-state guys and figuring out where they are, making sure that once they can start getting guys on campus again, they're the first ones in line, and then building it out from there. So I was a little worried about how this 22 class was coming together, but I think it's starting to pick up a little steam, and Burkett's already been out there rallying the troops on Twitter and trying to get on guys. So I think that's going to help out like Deacon Hill did back in the 2021 class.
What it's become. I mean, the same thing happened in basketball with Chucky Hepburn. He's kind of become a online recruiter. That's how things are done these days. Social media is huge. It's how these guys connect and, you know, Snapchat and all that stuff. So you almost, you know, not that the coaches have become less important, because that's not the case at all. But if you can have your players and your future players out there recruiting for you, it's big.
Yeah. We're going to put that on the list for next week, Chris. Chucky Hepburn is playing an incredible year.
I watched yesterday. They played a team from Iowa, and it was online. It was from a couple days ago, so I was watching it late. And I watched. I'm only through the third quarter right now, but yeah, he's got a little something. He plays with some attitude, and I like it. He's going to be a good player, I think. I think he's going to be a good player. I don't know, you know. Next season is a long way away. I don't even know what role he's going to be asked to be played, but I do think he's going to come in and help immediately in some capacity.
For sure. All right. So we're going to start wrapping up the show here. Jim, what do you got in the hopper here for this Michigan game, kind of previewing?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm going to go back and watch that Michigan game again this week, just to see where things went wrong. And I think we know where they went wrong, but I want to watch it again just to have some fresh eyes on it. And, you know, before I decide what to write for the weekend. And then, you know, this is, like we mentioned, this is a start of a huge stretch. Like Trevor Anderson said last night, now it gets real. It's Michigan and it's Iowa this week at home. Those huge, huge, huge games. And then at Northwestern, I mean, if you can win two of the next three, I think that's a pretty good run. If you can win all three of them, then you got something. And this team has not been able to get on a winning streak. And build any momentum, and you'd like to see that at some point soon.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so make sure on Madison.com, checking all that out. You can follow Jim on Twitter, Jim Polzine, WSJ. You can also follow me on Twitter, CBart, WSJ. Like I mentioned, that Burkett story coming out this weekend at some point, so make sure you're checking out Madison.com for that. All right, so that was Jim Polzine. I am Colton Bartholomew. Thank you guys so much for listening.